ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 19. The chapter is entitled King Pitu's 100 Horse Sacrifices. We have on the board text 25, and I've been given the assignment of covering text 23 through 25. 25 is linked with 24. And has the same translation of purport. So what I'll do is I'll do the I chant the Sanskrit translation purport for 23. I chant the Sanskrit for 24. And then together we'll chant 25. And then we'll do the translation of purport for 24 and 25. Okay? Yani Rupani Jagrihe in I'll do 23 and 24 and then we'll come to 25 and then we'll do that together. Yani Rupani Jagrihe Indrohaya Jihirshaya Tani Papasha Kandani Dingam Kandam Vihochate. I won't do the word for word on that. Whatever different forms Indra assumes as a mendicant because of his desire to seize a horse were symbols of atheistic philosophy. Report. According to the Vedic civilization, sannyas is one of the essential items in the program the Divine Ashram institution. One should accept sannyas according to the parampara system of the acharyas. At the present moment, however, many so-called sannyasis or mendicants have no understanding of God consciousness. Such sannyas was introduced by Indra because of his jealousy of Maharaj Pitu. And what he introduced is again appearing in the age of Kali. Practically none of the sannyasis in this age are bona fide. No one can introduce any new system into the Vedic way of life. If one does so out of malice, he is to be known as a Pashandi or atheist. In the Vaishnava Tantra it is said, Yastu Narayanam Devam Brahma Rudradi Daivatai Samatvai Naiva Vikshaita Sapashandi Bhavet Dhruvam. Although it is forbidden, there are many Prashandis who coin terms like Dridra Narayan and Swami Narayan. Although not even such demigods as Brahma and Shiva can be equal to Narayan. Okay, so now I'll chant the Sanskrit for 24 by myself, and then we'll do 25. Evam Indre Harab Yaj Yashkam Vainya Jagya Jigam Shaya Tadrihita Vishwish Teshu Pakandeshu Maturninam. Okay, now we can chant this one. Dharma Iti Upadharmeshu Vagna Rakta Patadishu Kayena Sajate Vantya Peshaleshu Cha that may show Dharma ityupadharmeshu Nagna rakta patatishu Prayena sajate bhantya Pesha leshu chavit vagmishu Dharma ityupadharmeshu Nagna rakta patatishu Prayena sajate bhantya Pesha leshu chavagmishu Dharma ityupadharmeshu Nagna rakta patadishu Payena sajate bhantya Pesha leshu chavagmishu
Combined text 24 and 25. Evan, thus, in Jay, when the King of Heaven, Arati, stalled, Ashram, the horse, Vainya, of the son of King Vena, Ragya, the sacrifice, Jigam Shaya, with a desire to stop, cut by him, Grihita, accepted, Vishrishteshu, abandoned, Pakandeshu, towards the sinful dress, Mati, attraction, Meenam, of the people in general. Dharma, system of religion. Iti, thus. Upadharmeshu, towards false religious systems. Nagna, naked. Rakta Pata, red robed, Adishu, etc. Prayena, generally, Sajate, is attached, Brantya, foolishly, Peshaleshu, expert, Cha, and Vagmishu, eloquent. Translation of purport by Srila Prabhupada. In this way, King Indra, in order to steal the horse from King Pitu's sacrifice, adopted several orders of sannyas. Some sannyasis go naked, and sometimes they wear red garments and pass under the name of Kapalika. These are symbolic, simply symbolic representations of their sinful activities. These so-called sannyasis are very much appreciated by sinful men because they are all godless atheists and very expert in putting forward arguments and reasons to support their case. We must know, however, that they are only passing as adherents of religion and are not so in fact. Unfortunately, bewildered persons accept them as religious, and being attracted to them, they spoil their life. Purport. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, men in this age of Kali are short-lived, devoid of spiritual knowledge, and susceptible to accept false religious systems due to their unfortunate condition. Thus, they always remain mentally disturbed. The Vedic Shastras practically prohibit the adoption of sannyas in the age of Kali because less intelligent men may accept the sannyas order for cheating purposes. Actually, the only religion is the religion of surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We must serve the Lord in Krishna consciousness. All of these systems of sannyas and religion are actually not bona fide. In this age, they are simply passing for religious systems. This is most regrettable. Translation again. In this way, King Indra, in order to steal the horse from King Prithu's sacrifice, adopted several orders of sannyas. Some sannyasis go naked, and sometimes they wear red garments and pass under the name of Kapalika. These are simply symbolic representations of their sinful activities. These so-called sannyasis are very much appreciated by sinful men because they are all godless and very expert in putting forward arguments and reasons to support their case. We must know, however, that they are only passing as adherents of religion and are not so in fact. Unfortunately, bewildered persons accept them as religious and being attracted to them, they spoil their life. Again, Timananda Shagunan Jano Shakaya Chakshu Umrikam Gina Toshma Shi Guru Vedanaha. So, in this pastime, we're getting quite a demonstration of the vipralipsa tendency of the conditioned soul. Vipralipsa means cheating, propensity. Prabhupada describes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that this cheating propensity manifests as someone pretending to be something that he's not. So this is the essence of vipralipsa or cheating propensity. Of course, we know that vipralipsa is one of the four defects of the conditioned soul. So, that tendency to cheat is quite deep-rooted. And it may seem a bit surprising that someone is highly positioned as King Indra, the King of Heaven, would engage in such shameful cheating. So, we can analyze why Indra is cheating
And by so doing, we might gain some insight into why we might be inclined to do the same thing. Because if we dismantle, if we philosophically dismantle tendencies that we may possess that are counterproductive to our spiritual advancement, it can be very auspicious and very helpful to our center of spiritual path. So in the second purport of this chapter, Prabhupada gives an analysis of this Kripalipsa tendency and where it comes from. And what it does to us, where it goes. First he describes how if one comes to this material world, and practically speaking that's the only reason we come, because we've got an enjoying spirit, this is how it starts, and it also has kind of as a corollary characteristic of envy. These two things go hand in glove together. So one comes to the material world and he wants to enjoy separately from Krishna. In the 11th canto, second chapter, what happens when we get into this enjoying spirit is described. Bhayam dhiti yabini veshita shad ishari pita sho vipariyoshmiti tanmayato guru avajetam bhaktyayka yesham guru teva tatma. So when the living entity identifies himself as a material body, he becomes overwhelmed by fear. And this condition, this bewildered condition, which is brought about by the influence of the material energy, causes him to vipariyoshmiti, go through a role reversal. Rather than seeing himself as Krishna's servant, he sees himself as Krishna's competitor, rather than being a servant, he sees himself as Krishna's competitor. So one who's actually intelligent and understands this, he takes the reformatory measures by accepting a spiritual master and worships him as good as God. And in this way, he engages in pure devotional service and reverses this role reversal and begins again situates himself as the servant of Krishna. So this competitive mood of Krishna is Ichatvesha Samutvena Dandva Mohina Bharata. So the living entity comes in this material world with these two primal psychological motivating forces of desire to enjoy separately from Krishna and envy of Krishna. So it is a competition, it's set up. And so similarly, as the jiva, bewildered by the illusory energy, has a competitive spirit, sees himself as a competitor for enjoyment with Krishna, he also sees himself as a competitor with other living entities. They're competing, and Prabhupada describes that this material world, people are competing for sense gratification. There's very, very vigorous competition for that in India, for instance. when a high school student, you know, sits his, what is it, the IGCSE exam? IGSE. C-S-E? I C S E. Okay. There's also I G C S E too, isn't there? Yeah. Okay, so let's just take the I C S E. Okay, that's the final exam. That's the summative exam, the exam of all exams that is designed to separate those that are expert at taking exams and have studied very hard. They've crammed like anything. They spent hours and hours staying up until 1 o'clock every night for 2 or 3 months with their tutors, you know, so that they get an opportunity to have a better opportunity for sense gratification in this material world. That's essentially what it is, because depending upon how they do on this exam, then they'll get into maybe IIT. Maybe they'll be a divisional champion in their state and get into IIT. If they don't get into IIT, they don't do quite so well. Maybe they'll get into NIT. And if they get into, the better the school, then the better the job afterwards. And the better the job, the more money and the more sense gratification. If they don't do well, if they fail, then they may decide my life is finished and they jump off of buildings, right? I mean, you see headlines in newspapers every year in India with children that do this. They didn't do well, their parents, they're disappointed, their life's finished because they can't go on the express lane, they're doomed to a life of not much money and not much sense gratification. So that's what goes on in the material world. That's one example, but practically speaking, material life is permeated with this mood of competition for sense gratification. So if we see a competitor, just as Indra saw Pitu about to maybe even surpass him, what awoke in Indra's heart? Anybody want to? Yes, get an idea, Prabhu. How do we commonly know that as? But what one word do we usually refer to that phenomena? Envy, right. Matsara. Envy. So it makes, when we have envy towards other jiva, other devotees, makes it very difficult for us to make spiritual advancement. Right in the, we can connect what we're talking about with the second verse of the Bhagavatam. Dharma pujita kartavo cha paramo vimatsaranam satam. So, this Bhagavad Purana propounds the highest truth, which is understandable by those who are fully pure in heart, Matsarana, Matsara, who are free from envy. So it's a great impediment for us when we have this. Now, there's another interesting connection with this aspect of envy and also of cheating, or maybe we can say duplicity or hypocrisy. One of the weeds to the creeper of devotional service, which also can be expressed as anartha derived from improperly performed devotional service, is kutinati. I see some familiar faces from Dubai. We just took Bhakti Shastri there. And Can anybody tell us what kutimati means? Huh? I have to say a real lot over the spin. Prapanibbana also means something else. It's a dual define. It has dual definitions that seem to be quite different, but yet actually they're quite connected. So fault finding and anybody else?
Prestige.
Well, that's what I was looking for. Certainly connected, but Prabhupada oftentimes defines it as duplicity. Duplicity or fault-finding mentality. So now, how are they connected? Raghunath Das Goswami gives a good analogy. And he describes, has anyone here ever taken a bath in ass urine? Please raise your hand if you've ever taken a bath in ass urine. No? No one has ever taken a bath in ass urine. Well, I'm glad to hear. But actually, if one is afflicted with kutimati, that's anartha, of duplicity and fault-finding, it's none different than bathing in ass urine. Okay, now, Raghunath Das Goswami says that we may think, just like we may sit around and discuss the faults of another devotee, thinking that this is very purifying. We're getting to the bottom of this person's difficulties. We're actually establishing a higher standard in ISKCON by doing this. You know, we're pushing the movement on by finding faults in this devotee, particularly if he's in a leadership position. And by doing this, I'm actually becoming clean. But this is the illusion, of bathing in ass urine. So there's a fault finding that goes on, but it's also, by putting someone else down, I put myself up. This is the duplicity aspect of kutimati. I fault find, by putting this person down, I further my own case. And in the realm of envy that's so prominent in the material world, I'm beating my competitor. Does this phenomenon seem at all? Like, is it something that any of us can relate to that have witnessed taking place? Has any of you ever, no, I won't ask you that. I was going to ask you, have any of you ever participated in such a thing? Okay, I think all of us can reflect. I mean, we can look at the hypocrisy and the cheating and the envy that is manifesting in the heart of Lord Indra and be amazed by it. But maybe even more productively, if we look at it within our own heart. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in the second chapter of Bhajan Rahasya, he describes that if one doesn't do anything about the anarthas in his heart, doesn't make an effort to pray the anarthas in his heart, then he will achieve only misfortune in his life. Okay, and then the next verse in Bhajan Rahasya. I mean, we may try to do something and demonstrate our sincerity by doing that. And we also may witness, we may become increasingly aware of the presence of anarthas, the presence of kutimati. Which is
a way of describing our cheating and envy. And the more we become aware of it, the more we're humbled by that, which is actually quite productive. Because the humility, Janapi Sunichena, Turarapi Sahishnuna, Amanina, Manadena, Kirtaniya, Sadahari, then, and if we wear that understanding, that humility, around our necks, strung by the Hare Krishna mantra, that can be extremely productive for us. So in the next verse of Bhajan Rahasya, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he describes that the way to actually become free of the anarthas is that actually without the mercy of the holy name we can't become free of them. And he describes that if one cries very sincerely to the holy name, and he does this for several days, he can become free of all of these anarthas. Get back the son of the holy name, and then he gets the full mercy of the holy name. And then he can hear and chant about the glories of the Lord and chant Hare Krishna, Kirtaniya Sadahari, always. So that's what we can do if we're afflicted with Kuti Nati. And but we have to be honest with ourselves about that in the first place. We can't just be thinking, oh, this ass urine bath is really great, and I'm really getting clean, and I'm feeling really good about this, and I'm furthering my cause by doing politics. And pulling this other guy down and pushing myself up. It's a very, unfortunately, it's a common phenomenon. It takes place even in the Sangha of ISKCON devotees. We shouldn't participate in this. We should cry to the holy name to free us of this weed, to the creeper of devotional service. So that takes honesty, it takes sincere crying to the holy name to achieve. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Prabhupada cites him in several places in Madhya Lila and elsewhere in different morning walks and lectures. Bhaktivinoda Thakur's description of Kali Chela. And Kali is the age of Kali, and Chela means servant. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Prabhupada cites him in the first chapter of Madhya Lila, as saying that there are many Kali Chelas who are in the garb of Vaishnavas, but whose business is money and women and criticizing genuine Vaishnavas. Okay, so Kali Chela. And Prabhupada brings it up many times in his classes. So that Kuti Nati tendency, because what is that Kuti Nati? You know, it's based upon, just like there is this impurity in Indra, he wants to enjoy. You know, now, in the Vedic times, you know, to maintain one's capacity to rule the Ashvamedha Yajna is recommended. When Bali Maharaj, in the 8th canto, when he knocked Indra out of the position of King of Heaven, his Supacharya immediately recommended that he perform Ashvamedha Yajna, so he could retain that position. So King Prithu, you know, he's doing this, you know, to establish, you know, increase his own piety and qualification for ruling. And as a result of the Ashwamedha yajnas that he's performing, you know, so much opulence and so much well-being is being created on the earth planet. But Indra is threatened by this. There's an impure desire in Indra's heart, you know, that's based upon dominating the material world, the Pariyoshmi team. You know, so he sees Indra as a competitor, so he wants to undo the Jagya, particularly the last one, because it would put him on the same level of piety, the same level of qualification. This is within Indra's understanding that Indra himself has achieved. So he uses duplicity as the means to end cheating and stealing and all kinds of abominable activities to undo Pitu Maharaj's spiritual progress. Spiritual progress, increasing his qualification to render service to the Lord, because that's his mindset. Pitu Maharaj is endowed with Vaishnava character. There isn't duplicitous or materially motivated desire in his heart. And that's contrasted with the contamination in Indra's heart. He's materially motivated for sense gratification, for dominance in the material world. He wants to fortify his position and keep off, you know, any competitors. He doesn't do it just once. He's doing this at different times in the Bhagavatam. Have we ever witnessed this kind of behavior within our society? I have. You know, and sometimes it's very shameful to see how someone's trying to hold someone else down and not give them facility to render service and make spiritual advancement to fortify his own position and move his own agenda ahead for dominance. So this is a graphic example. Now if we contrast this with the mentality of an elevated Vaishnava, when an elevated Vaishnava sees the advancement of another Vaishnava, what is his move? The elevated Vaishnava, he's experiencing ecstasy and he's so ecstatic to see someone else increasing his reciprocation with the Lord, becoming more and more free from the fetters of material existence. He's in ecstasy. And therefore, he helps others rather than block them. It's such a negative experience to feel that someone's blocking you in your attempt to render service. So heavy, so disturbing to the heart. And we have to adjust when we go through that. So, you know, by understanding that somehow or other, Krishna has arranged someone to deal with me in such a way for my own purification, but still it's painful. When we understand the pain of that, then we should be very careful not to inflict the same kind of pain on another devotee. We should always try to help him, always try to help other devotees come up, come closer to Krishna, sometimes in doing that, we have to be strong to help them understand, you know, maybe they're making some mistakes, this or that, but it never should be with a motive to keep them down, to block them. So in order to have this kind of mentality, we have to root out within our own hearts the desire to enjoy materially, because they go together. In the third chapter of Gita, Karmendriyani Samyamya Ya Aste Manasasmanan Indriyebhyam Vimuratma Mityachara Sauchate. So one who restrains the senses of action, but whose mind meditates on the sense objects, simply deludes himself and is called a pretender, mityachara. So again, that kind of connects to the concept of the Kali Chela. And then there's even a heavier term, Dharma Dwaji, is the term that Bhaktivinoda Thakur also uses. Okay, I didn't get a chance to look it up, I'm just aware that it's there. But it describes someone who flies a dwaja. Anyone know what dwaja means? It's like a flag. So he flies the flag of Dharma, but in his heart, again, his bhajan is many women and criticizing Vaishnavas. And so, sorry, I didn't get a chance to look this up, but Bhagavan Thakur says that even more contaminating than the gross sense gratifier is the Dharma Dwaji. Because in his heart, we've got all this dirty business. But externally, you know, he's got the tilak, he's got the shika, shaved head, the dhoti, or the sari, and he pulls one in, you know, kind of in clever ways to his nasty business. And so devotees can be greatly affected by this. So we shouldn't be Dharma Dwajis, we shouldn't be Kali Chelas. We should sincerely try to overcome the inertness in our heart and free ourselves from envy of other devotees, try to serve them and help them. And this is how we'll experience happiness in life. This is how we'll realize Srila Prabhupada's teachings and how we can become instruments in his hands. Okay, let me stop here. I can read the translations that we covered today, and then maybe there's some questions or comments. Whatever different forms Indra assumed as a mendicant because of his desire to seize the horse were symbols of atheistic philosophy. In this way, King Indra, in order to steal the horse from King Pritu's sacrifice, adopted several orders of sannyas. Some sannyasis go naked, and sometimes they wear red garments and pass under the name of Kapalika. These are simply symbolic representations of their sinful activities. These so-called sannyasis are very much appreciated by sinful men because they are all godless atheists and very expert in putting forward arguments and reasons to support their case. We must know, however, that they are only passing as adherents of religion and are not so in fact. Unfortunately, bewildered persons accept them as religious and being attracted to them will spoil their life. Hare Krishna. Questions or comments?
So if someone is
Could someone turn this fan off?
An example, say, if someone is being deficient towards
us. In your mouth, otherwise I'll have trouble hearing.
If someone is finding fault with us unjustifiably, unfairly, and should we...
Finding fault with who?
If someone is finding fault with ourselves, and basically it may be unjustifiably or unfair, should we defend ourselves, or should we think that this is my karma from a past life or something, and I just accept it? Or what position should we do if we're in that position of a victim, so to speak?
Well, there's a reference. I can't remember where it is. I could look it up and pull it because I can know this. I know the search words, but I can't think of where it is in the first part of the Bhagavatam, but it describes that if those that attack us, we should see that they're acting helplessly under the control of God. Okay, here's another reference. I know where this is. What connects with this very point? I mean, this kind of sets the stage of consciousness that we should try to be on in order to deal with this in the most effective Krishna conscious way. Here's another really powerful reference. It's 1.7.19, Bhagavatam. This is the passing away of Bhishma gate. Okay, and so Prabhupada, he's describing different rasas, different transcendental bhavs that the Lord has with different devotees. So it's like Bhishma gate. Lord attacked him, right? There's a chivalrous ras. Is that Hashya? Maybe Hashya ras. Maybe that's... Anyway, I never went that far in like the Rasamrita Sindhu. And so then there's another, the tribulations that a devotee experiences, there's another transcendental bhav. Reciprocation with the Lord. The tribulations that a devotee experiences in his life are another transcendental reciprocation with the Lord. And in the commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he describes, on this verse, he describes that Krishna sends distress to a devotee to help him develop his devotion. Okay, so when these experiences come our way, they're going to be extremely painful. You've been through it, probably you've been around in this gun for many years. I sure have. It can be very, very painful and sometimes very disturbing. So that experience that we're going through, if we see it as a transcendental reciprocation coming from the Lord, and the Lord is controlling our attacker, he's acting helplessly, and it's for our upliftment, then we can elevate ourselves by our mind rather than becoming degraded by it. Does that make sense? Okay, so now in terms of whether we should defend ourselves or not, then I guess it's a function of anukul yasya sankalpa patikul yasya varjita. Surrender means accepting that which is favorable for our devotional service and rejecting that which is unfavorable. Now the deep knee-jerk reaction would be to defend ourselves. This is the fearing, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Prabhupada described that this is the most deep-rooted of these material propensities because it pervades the other three. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending.
So then this takes a lot of introspection and thought. Should I react to the attack that's being launched on me? Would it be favorable to my devotional service? There's another powerful reference that comes later up in this pastime. After Lord Vishnu enters the arena of sacrifice. And Prabhupada in the purporting describes how if one goes through, how is it described? If there's something that takes place by providential arrangement, and he tries to undo his providential arrangement, he becomes more entangled in the material arrangement. I think that's pretty much what's the point that's being made. I can't give you the exact reference, but it's up ahead, you know, in this pastime. So one has to be very introspective. If the attack is based upon the other person's anartha of kutimati, and he's falsifying charges, in your service, you have a very strong sense that you haven't done what you're being accused of, and that your service is pleasing to Krishna, then you can carefully, I say carefully, rather than coming down to that level, you know, of attack and attacker and defend and attack and, you know, start a fratricide or war, you can carefully defend yourself, maybe by seeking shelter of a senior devotee who has maybe some influence or even authority over your attacker, and ask him to rectify the unfair treatment that you're being given because it's impeding your ability to serve. If it doesn't impede your ability to serve, but brings humility to your heart, because maybe the attacker is finding some real shortcomings that you have in your heart, then keep your mouth shut and take the mercy, because that's what it is. I remember one time, this was one of the most, it wasn't really an attack, but it was a heavy chastisement. It was a very unique experience. It was my wife had entered labor with our first son. Okay, and this was at a time of Rath Yatra in Dallas, Texas. And the next day was to be in the Shringa Chaturdasi. Okay, so I was had the service of being in essence the National Sankirtan leader in America. And I would go temple to temple and help get book distribution going. So I had been invited by Tamal Krishnaraj to get Sankirtan going in Dallas. Wasn't that much happening there at that time. And so he invited me to come there. And he got right behind it. He had a powerful personality, so it really started happening. But then I found out about even a greater facility for rendering service. And that was Dhanavira Goswami and Gunagari Swami at Krishna Fest. They had 35 new bhaktas that needed to be trained.
as essentially working with grahasthas, you know, that were been around for a long time, so their capacity was a bit limited in terms of how many books they could get out, and that was my service, to stimulate increases in book distribution. So at that time, Mohini Sutta and Bhitu Prabhu and Paladinima Swami were in Dallas, and they found out that I planned to leave Dallas to go to Potomac and take up service at Krishna Fest, and they didn't think it was the proper thing to do. And so they talked to Mount Krishna Maharaj about it, and they were actually in the room when this discussion was going on, and to Mount Krishna Maharaj, as only to Mount Krishna Maharaj could do, chastised me for 1.5 hours. I mean, it was so heavy. And afterwards, I was thinking, my God, how can I go on? I was thinking that maybe I should throw myself in front of the wheels of the rat cart. And about, you know, half an hour later, he sent one of his disciples to, you know, to invite me over for lunch. You know? And so I was a little frightened, you know, about what might happen, you know, after going through 1.5 hours of getting, as we used to say in America, the sauce. But I went over there and there was this big table, you know, and Pitu and Mohini Sutta and Vladana Swami were all sitting there and they were having a nice, pleasant conversation. And I was like, my subtle body was so, you know, traumatized. What I could go through, I couldn't even understand what they were talking about. I felt like I was on another planet. So then, you know, my wife, we had a midwife, but then she lost confidence in her. You know, she ended up going through 48 hours of labor. And I remember I was in the hospital. We cast aside the midwife and she just wanted to go there because the midwife was telling, "Well, just go to sleep. You must be tired." And she, "What is she talking about? How can I go to sleep? You know, it is so painful." So anyway, we ended up in the hospital. I remember calling up Shesha because I worked under him. He was at North American BBT Trustees and telling him about this event that had just taken place. And the only thing he could do was just chuckle and say, "You really got the mercy, Gen Master me." But I couldn't really understand that. And so for the next 3 months, and then my son actually took birth, and the last titi of Nishina Chotosi, you know, by cesarean section, which seems fitting, you know, for the day. And, you know, very, very purifying for my wife and myself, you know, on all levels. But then a few days later we took our newly born son back to the temple and we came in to take darshan, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj was given a Bhagavatam class. So then he started glorifying my wife, he started glorifying me. She did book distribution up to about 10 days before she gave birth. She was a really good book distributor in those days. But every morning when I wake up, the first thing that would come to my consciousness, this whole scenario of how Tamal Krishna Maharaj was very intelligently cutting, you know, all of my thoughts, you know, cutting my false ego to smithereens every single day for the next 3 months. I did leave Dallas, and then, you know, he was kind of, I didn't really have any deal. The fellow president was really upset with me. He just invested like $10,000 in renovating an apartment for us. I couldn't ever figure, and he kept pointing out, because when he gave us a tour of the apartment, we're going to put a bathtub there. And I've been a brahmachari for 14 years. I couldn't figure out what is the value of a bathtub. I didn't really know what it meant to be a father. So anyway, the next time I had Tamal Krishna Maharaj's association was in Vrindavan, and Prabhupada's disappearance day. And I was waiting in line to bathe Srila Prabhupada and just happened to be standing behind Tamal Krishna Maharaj. And he turned around and said, "Ah, Janmashtami." And here I've been, you know, 3 months, you know, just kind of being haunted with all of this. And just intense purification. And I said, "Maharaj," but I could see that he was right and many of the points that he had made. You know, that he was spot on. You know, he's a super intelligent Vaishnava. So he turned around and said, "Ah, Janmashtami." And I just, the only thing that would come out of my mouth, I said, "Maharaj, I just want to thank you for so expertly chastising me that day." And then he said to me, "Janmashtami, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done that. I know that you had a mission to perform." And so, you know, it was kind of like the grand finale was very uplifting for both of us. I didn't shoot him behind the back, you know. And I mean, I kind of went back and forth with him when he was analyzing the situation, and I had my point and he had his point, but eventually I just got my mouth shut and he just cut me to smithereens. But ultimately it was very beneficial, and I became, Dhanadhar Swami told me that because you appreciated what he did, you know, that really solidified your relationship with him. So that's what can happen if we handle it properly. It can be a source of upliftment or it can be a source of degradation. I mean, it was touch and go, you know, my mind was trying to pull me down into the modes, but I kept trying to see the value in it and see how Krishna had arranged it. Anyway. I think that kind of illustrates, you know, how, I mean, it was very heavy what he was saying. And if it hadn't been him, I probably would have rolled around on the floor with whoever was saying that, you know, and punching him and doing things like that. But you know, here he is, you know, to Mount Krishna Maharaj, you know, to Srila Prabhupada's right-hand man. So, you know, don't really do much but sit there and take it. I mean, it wasn't the first time. There are many other instances like that, I'm sure you have gone through it. But, you know, it's actually a powerful arrangement of the Lord. You know, the first thing that we can pop into our mind, tat-te-nu-kam-tam-shukshamakshamana. You know, if we see it philosophically and really have faith that Krishna's coming to us with in his transcendental bhav, it can be very blissful to go through these episodes. We can experience ecstasy in the midst of our agony. Anything else? Other comments or questions? Shri Prabhupada ki jai.